Okay, first of all, today's Beis Tammuz, and it's actually the 80th anniversary since the original Yud Beis Tammuz, Tafresh Beis Zayin, 1927. Now it's 2007, so it's been a while since the Chagagol of the Friedige Rebbe Yud Beis Tammuz. The beginning of the story Yud Beis Tammuz happened in Tafresh Nun Hei, 1895. When the Friedrich Rebbe was 15, the Friedrich Rebbe and his father used to go away to Dacha. They went away supposedly on vacation. But truly, the purpose was that Rebbe Rashab spent a lot of time with the Friedrich Rebbe, talking to him and being madachim, being machanachim. It's a Rebbe raising a Rebbe. The Seder was that every Monday they would travel to Lubavitch from the Dacha. Because the Rebbe Rashab's custom was that every Monday he would go to see his mother. The Rebbe, our Rebbe, went to see his mother every day. The Rebbe Rashab would go in to see his mother once a week, and he would cook up a chaynik of water, and he would give her a glass of tea, and he would serve her, and they would sit and shmuas and fabreng, and this was his mitzvah, kibud aveim. When he was away from Lubavitch, sometimes when he was even out of the country, he would come home for the Monday tea, and then leave. He would come to Lubavitch, give her tea, and leave. I mean, this was very important to him, to give his mother tea. So every Monday, they traveled from wherever they were, and they came to Lubavitch. He went into his mother, and of course the Friedrich Rebbe went along. This was his grandmother, and the Rebbe Rashab gave her tea, and then they went back. Well, one week they came Monday, the next day Tuesday was the Beis Tammuz, and they're going to Lubavitch again. So the Friedrich Rebbe says to his father, the Rebbe, why are we going to Lubavitch now? And his father says, you'll see. They come to Lubavitch. It's the Friedrich Rebbe's 15th birthday. Yud Beis Tammuz Tov Kuf Nun Hei, Tafresh Nun Hei, 15 years old. Okay, he takes him to the oil of his father and grandfather, the Rebbe Rashab, Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek. And by the oil, he says to Friedrich Rebbe, I am making with you Akedas Yitzchak. And he says to him, I want to make a covenant with you that in all matters of Askonas Tziburis, anything that has to do with the public service of Klal Yisrael, you should be ready for Mesiras Nefesh. And he told the Friedrich Rebbe that from today on, you are my right hand. The Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, was 15 years old, and he became his father's right hand. A young boy like this, the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, never had a childhood. That's it. From the age of 15 years old, he was a public servant. The Friedrich Rebbe says that there were many times that he would actually write letters in his father's handwriting. He would write letters in his father's handwriting, and his father would sign them, because many letters had to be written, and his father didn't have time. Whenever they went to big, important meetings, even the most prominent Jews, the Friedrich Rebbe sat with his father, the Rebbe, and he was his right hand. He was a young boy, didn't even have a beard, but he was the Rebbe Rashab's right hand. One time, the Rebbe Rashab sent him to a meeting where all the Gedalei Yisrael were present, and it was very weird, a young kid with so many Gedalei, so he sent this Rashbat, who was an old chassid with a long white beard, and some Matzalik's a chassid along with the Friedrich Rebbe, and right before they left, he calls in the Rashbat, who was a very smart man, and he says to the Rashbat, Du sollst wissen, as ich schick em, was weniger the Vesach Mission als Vesach. You should know I'm sending him, not you. You're the beard. He's the personality. He's the mind. And the less you'll interfere, the less you'll mix in, the better it'll be. So the Friedrich Rebbe was involved with all the Gedalei Yisrael and the white beard, and Rashbat sat quiet. This is the Friedrich Rebbe. So the Rebbe Rashab very early on made the Friedrich Rebbe a public servant. One of the more interesting stories is that the Friedrich Rebbe's father told him that for Askonas Tziburis, for public service, you have to have Mesiras Nefesh. And he asked the Friedrich Rebbe if he knows what Mesiras Nefesh means. So the Friedrich Rebbe said he doesn't. So the Rebbe said to him, Mesiras Nefesh means that if you're traveling on a path and you come to a stone wall and you can't climb over it and you cannot go underneath it, you pound your head against the wall. Not your fist or your knee or your foot, your head against the wall, and you make a hole and you go through. This is what the Rebbe Rashab told the Friedrich Rebbe. Fast forward the tape a few years. Tov Reish Ayin Aleph, 1910. The beginning of the new year was already Tov Reish Ayin Aleph. It's 5671. It was Tishrei. That year they were doing major repairs on the Lubavitch. They were doing major repairs in the Beis Medrash. And as a result, the regular Beis HaMedrash with the place where the Rebbe Rashab normally Fabrengd was not available. So the Bochim, the Vav Masada, had to set up an alternate place for the Fabrengen. And they made the place of the Fabrengen in what was called the Mkleinim Zal. Apparently, it was a big base medish and a smaller base medish. Mkleinim Zal. The Klein Zal, the small base medish, had been the Reb Marash's base medish. Unbeknownst to the Bacharim who were organizing, this was the Reb Marash's shul. They were young. They weren't even born when the Reb Marash passed away almost 30 years before. And they put the Reb Rashab's chair in the very place where the Reb Marash's tahara had taken place. After the Reb Marash's stalkos, they did his tahara there in that spot. As soon as the Rebbe walked in and he saw where he was seated, he became immediately emotional. And there was a Fabrengen, which is historic. I mean, people who were at Fabrengen, they all described that Fabrengen. Rabbi Jacobson describes it, Folakan describes it, Perlov, anybody at Fabrengen describes it in their memoirs. The emotion, the passion of Fabrengen was so intense. The Rebbe started talking about his father, and that he's his father's chassid. And he would call individuals, Elter Chassidim, and he would talk to them about the Reb Marash. It was very powerful Fabrengen. And the Reb Marash got so emotional that people were pushing worried about his health. And he was so excited, so inspired. It was frightening. So they called his mother. The Rebbe Tzinifke was still alive. She passed away 3 years later, Yitzhak. And she walked in. As soon as she walked in, of course, the Rebbe stood up. And the Rebbe stood up, all the Chassidim stood up. And she walked over to the Friedrich Rebbe, to the Rebbe Rashab, and she said to the Rebbe Nishma Seyden, maybe you'll stop the Fabrengen. So the Rebbe says, I should stop the Fabrengen. It's Simchas Teira, I'm sitting with Chassidim, and we have such a Seyderus, how should I stop the Fabrengen? So she says to him, Dir is nit good. It's the Yiddish. Dir is nit good. Dir is nit means you don't feel well. In other words, you're exerting yourself. It's not good for you. But in Yiddish, Dir is nit good means you were given a bad hand. Your life is terrible. Dir is nit good means you have a difficult life. Dir is nit good. So when she says to her son, the Rebbe, Dir is nit good, the Rebbe says, Mir is nit good. Mir is good. Mir is gar good. Halavaisel Yosef Yitzchak Zaynazik. This is 9.5 years before he passes away. He says to his mother, I don't have it good. I have it very good. I have it so good. Halavai, my son, should have it so good. You understand? You understand? You understand what's going on? Rebbe and Rebbe. I know. And the people who heard that comment would understand 15 years later the Ruach HaKodesh Pashut. And it could be said, I mean, nobody knows for sure, that the reason that Rebbe Nishma said made the Friedrich Rebbe ask him at 15, it wasn't only because the Rebbe needed him. The Rebbe was Pasha teaching the Friedrich Rebbe Mesiras Nefesh. The Friedrich Rebbe was destined to be a Rebbe of Mesiras Nefesh. From the age of 15 years old, he had no life. The Friedrich Rebbe did not have a private life. He was a public servant. He was traveling and running around as a teenager, Pasha. In any case, this was a Mayan Aleph. When the Rebbe Rasha passed away, he left him a will. He left his son, the Friedrich Rebbe, a will. In the will, he gives him instructions. The instruction, first of all, the Rebbe Rashab's will is very extensive. It's very deep. It's very scholarly. The Rebbe Rashab's will is in the Rebbe's library, and no one has ever seen it. It's private. The Friedrich Rebbe publicized one page of it, but evidently it's a very, very long, complicated. The Rebbe Rashab spent a whole week writing it, from morning till night. The Rebbe Rashab spent a week writing anything, it's involved. But one page was publicized, which are the instructions that the Rebbe Rashab gave the Friedrich Rebbe that relates to Chassidim. And it says there, first of all, that he should strengthen the Moisa Temchit Mimim, and he should continue to do the work of Temchit Mimim. And the Rebbe Rashab says nobody has a right to change the Tzir Pnimi, the Neshama model of what Temchit Mimim is, and so forth. And another thing he writes about is the strengthening of learning Hasidus. After World War I, the Rebbe Rashab, together with the Friedrich Rebbe, started to renew the traditions of learning Hasidus and the davening of Hasidus, and they sent letters to every community with the Lubavitcher Hasidim, encouraging the old traditions of the Mashpia and Shalosh Shulis with a Maimed and the Lava Malka, the Chabad traditions, and they were very successful. But then the revolution happened. Friedrich Rebbe became a Rebbe, and the Pashtus, he was going to be involved mostly in Temchit Mimim, and Hasidus, that's the job of a Rebbe. And then, within a matter of months and years, by 1921, 22, 23, it became apparent that the Soviets were going to destroy Yiddishkeit completely. And the Friedrich Rebbe said, "Where are the Rabbanim? Good evening, hello, welcome. Where are the Rabbanim? Where are the Jewish leaders? Where are the people who are supposed to
fight
against the decline and the collapse of Yiddishkeit, Rabbonim ran for their lives. Because if a Rav would object to the closing of shuls and the closing of mikvahs and for the cancelling of shechitas and for the closing of yeshivas and chadarim, they went to jail. And the Fidik Rebbe realized that all the Rabbonim are on the run. So the Rebbe said, I realize that if I'm not going to do it, nobody will, and he made it his personal life's mission. And the Rebbe would say years later, the Fidik Rebbe would say years later, that kar mishali le natati. Kar mishali le natati means my own vineyard. I did not tend. The Rebbe said, my job is a Rebbe, a Chabad Rebbe. What is a Chabad Rebbe's business? Learning Chassidus, teaching Chassidus, inspiring Chassidus. Instead, what am I busy with? Olive Beis, Chadorim, Mikveh Tahara, and all kinds of things, which is the job of the local Rav. It's not the job of a Rebbe, a Tzadik, a Nosi B'Yisrael. But the Rebbe says, since everybody was running away from their positions and nobody else would do it, I realized that I have to do it myself. And the Friedrich Rebbe set up a network that's really amazing. I mean, we really don't realize how successful the Friedrich Rebbe was. Friedrich Rebbe was a major Chevroman. He wasn't only a holy man, he was an extremely effective organizer and leader. In hundreds of towns all over Russia, he set up yeshivas, and he supported them all. How he got the money, nobody knows. A lot of the money came from America, but not all of it. The Rebbe was extremely efficient and capable as a leader. There's an amazing story which is published, where the Friedrich Rebbe met one of the most important people in the whole Communist Party of Russia on a train, a Jewish guy, who said to the Rebbe, he recognized the Friedrich Rebbe, because when he was a boy, his father brought him to the Rebbe Marash. And the Rebbe Marash and the Friedrich Rebbe were identical. They looked very the same. So we asked him if he's Harav Schneer's son. So he says, no, I'm his grandson. And he made an appointment to meet the Friedrich Rebbe in his hotel. It's a whole story how the Friedrich Rebbe met him. But one of the things he says to the Friedrich Rebbe is, I have an old father who's religious, and he hates me. He calls me a goy because I came a communist. But I love him, he says, and I wanted to give him some money. He refuses to take my money. So the Friedrich Rebbe writes, I thought to myself, I know his father. I'm supporting him. States, the Friedrich Rebbe is sitting with one of the most important people in the Communist Party, who happens to be a Jew, and he's complaining his father won't take any money, he was a Malamed, and the Friedrich Rebbe was paying Pashat Yitzhak. This was how the Friedrich Rebbe operated. It was extremely effective and successful. Extremely so. And then, of course, he was arrested. Pei Zayin was an eventful year. From the very beginning of the year, it didn't have a good flavor. First of all, it's an Ibiyah, it's a leap year. And even though when the Rebbe talked about a leap year, he always made a leap year into like the best thing in the world. The fact is that the Rebbeim were very afraid of leap years. Leap years made the Rebbeim uncomfortable. Second of all, that Rosh Hashanah, the Rosh Hashanah Pei Zayin, 1927, 26 to 27, when the Friedrich Rebbe blew Shofar, Friedrich Rebbe blew the Tkiyas, so it begins with Lamnatzeach. You remember how Tkiyas goes? You say Kapitel Mem Zayin 7 times, and then there's some Psukim, and then there's Brachas. So the Friedrich Rebbe announced Lamnatzeach with Nekerech Mizmer. And the Seder by the Rabbeim was that there would be something called Hachon of the Tkiyas. You girls don't remember this. You remember Tkiyas by the Rebbe?
Vaguely.
The Rebbe took throw his talus over and said, I'm sorry?
I remember Yom Kippur much stronger.
The Rosh Hashanah. Do you remember Tkiyas by the Rebbe?
Me?
You weren't here. You weren't here.
You must have been very, very young.
Right, right.
Yeah,
the Rebbe would set up the packages with the letters, Bedienis, then he would throw his towels over his head, and he would sway back and forth, and he could, in the earlier years, it could take a long time, and there was a lot of emotion. The Rebbe would cry, he was very powerful. And then the Rebbe would pick up his talus, and the proceedings would go on. And it begins with Lamnatzeach with Nekerech Mizmer. The Rebbe would put the talus behind his ears, he would hold up the talus, and he would say the first pasuk loud, and then he would throw his talus over his head. And it's a different discussion for another occasion. But when the Friedrich Rebbe said Lamnatzeach, he shouted, I serze Lamnatzeach. Serze means my heart. I, my heart, Lamnatzeach. Chassidim knew that when the Rebbe says, by Tkiyas, I serze Lamnatzeach, not a good sign. Because 3/4 of a century before, in Tafresh Gimel, 1842 to 43, and now we're talking 1927, the Friedrich Rebbe's great-grandfather, the Rebbe Tzemach Tzedek, said in the Tkiyas, I said Salam Mateach, And that year was the famous Asifa, the famous meeting in Petersburg, where the Rebbe was forced, the Tzemach Tzedek was forced to participate in meetings in the capital where the government wanted to interfere with matters of Yiddish Chinuch. On the page that I handed you, the Friedrich Rebbe says, it's right after the skip in the space. This was Tafresh Gimel, this was 1842, 1843. And the Tzemach Tzedek then shouted, I said Salam Natzeich. So the Friedrich Rebbe said, Rosh Hashanah, I said Salam Natzeich, Hasidim knew it's not good. And that whole Tisha, the Friedrich Rebbe was very bitter, very bitter. Simchas Torah, the Friedrich Rebbe introduced the Mifza of Tilim. You know, we have Chitas, Chumash, Tilim, Danya. Tilim was started, Simchas Torah, Tafresh Pei Zayin. It's on page 211. It's in Koivitz Mechtavim, okay? In the back of the Tilm, you have Koivitz Mechtavim. It's on page 211. Miluyim Ketam Mechtav. So, on page 211, in the footnote, now everybody needs to take off their glasses. Yeah. When you reach 40, you worry about this. You know what? Someone's got to change with me because I can't say a word.
Oh, that's
personal. Here, this will work for you. It says like this, and I'm reading the footnote. Okay, you see this footnote right here? This long footnote?
Yeah.
This is a letter that was written by a chassid named Rebbe Lechaim Altoiz. Rebbe Lechaim Altoiz was a dear, dear friend of the Friedrich Rebbe's. Altoiz, Rebbe Lechaim, yes. He was killed by the Nazis in Mashmah. He was mamash the Friedrich Rebbe's. Rebbe calls him Yedid Nafshi, Yedidi Oiz. He was a very smart chassid. And he was one of the people who was involved in the Rebbe Shidduch. I'm sorry? Elichayim. Rebbe Lechaim Altoiz. Oh, he was an uncle. An uncle. There were two brothers, Rebbe Lechaim, and the other one I forgot, and they had many children. So they're all related to Altoiz. They were very close. They were Nikolaev. It means that the Rebbe was born in Nikolaev. So they knew the Rebbe as a child. The Rebbe moved to Yekaterinoslav at the age of 7. And then when they would come to the Rebbe, the Altoiz, they would hug him and kiss him, push him like old friends. Even though they were chassidim, because they knew the Rebbe as a little boy. They knew Nikolaev. Rebbe Lechaim Altoiz was a very special chassid. And I'm reading this letter. Mereishis Tafresh Peizayit. In the beginning of that year, Shnas HaYadua, the year which is, of course, notorious for the terrible calamity that occurred. Nofal Pachat Godel, a great fear fell. El Kol HaMukurovim Oz, to all those who were close, El Beis Chayenu Shlita, to the house of the Rebbe, V'gam Rabbeinu Shlita, by Pachta Yosef. The Friedrich Rebbe himself was in that fear personally. Kasher Shamanu Mefurish, as we heard explicitly, the Rebbe Lechaim is saying, Ani, I, V'yedideinu, and our dear friend, Rav Mechol Shichit Dvorkin, the great Chosid Mechol Dvorkin, Mipiv HaKotche, from the Mekadosh, in the holy mouth of the Friedrich Rebbe, Be'ir Miklotle Kastrama, in his city of refuge, when the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, was held in Kastrama for those 11 days that he was there, or 9 days that he was there, Bazeh Haloshen Os Bos Mamish. This is word for what the Friedrich Rebbe told me. Fatof Resh Pezayin, Habach Zich Shtar Yishroken. I was very afraid of this year, 1927. Oiv Zich Habach Nit Meshayim Givezen. I never imagined that it would mean me personally. Gitach Habach Begin Chassidim. I thought it meant that Chassidim are going to have a hard year, the Friedrich Rebbe said. Before I gave the commandment to say chitas, the tilim, chumash and tanya was added when the Rebbe made ayoyim yoyim. But the tilim of chitas was made in Pezayin, the year the Friedrich Rebbe's arrest. Is mir angekum in zeyer shver. I had a very difficult time. So the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, in the beginning of that year, had announced the idea of saying tilim. Sha'alti ani, so Rebbe Lechaim says, I asked the Friedrich Rebbe, Moshe Hayativim, when did the Friedrich Rebbe talk about saying tilim? That year. V'nei Nesi, so the Friedrich Rebbe told me, B'yem Simchas Teda by day. Oz Niskarti, Rebbe Lechaim says, then I remembered. Ki B'yem Simchas Teda, the Shana Hahi, that year in Simchas Teda, Hirbo Levakesh as a Nasha Yichye. He very repeatedly requested of Chassidim, Be'ez HaKiddush, during the Kiddush, B'cheder Imei Rabbanah Shlita, in the cheder, the room of his mother, the Rebbe Sishtan Esara, they should accept upon themselves bli neder, leimer to say, b'chol yom each day, shir tilim, a measure of tilim. You see what I'm reading? You with me still?
Kemoisha nechlak al chodesh yomaz is divided according to the months. V'leimir, and to say, b'chol ha-minyonim in every minyan, achat tfila shachas, after shachas, people should say tilit. V'leimir kadesh acharav, and to finish off with kadesh. So Rabbi L'chaim says, eichar, ani, I remember. Ki sha'altiv oz, I, says Rabbi L'chaim, ask the friya di kerebe. Then, if I can fulfill this obligation by the tilam I say before davening, the Rebbe answered me, the tilam was mezok far in davening, shayach to tikkun chatzos, the tilam we say before davening, it's connected to tikkun chatzos, and after davening you have to say tilam. Ubechalal, hayukol asicha shal Rabbeinu shlita b'yayim simchas teira hazeh ad alayla, on simchas teira a whole day, the Rebbe was berev meridus. He was very bitter. Imagine a Rebbe, Simcha stayed bitter, or believe nishba v'nitla with a broken and crushed heart.
Is that why we don't say tilm before davening?
This is why we don't say. No, we could say tilm before davening, but chitas is after davening, and this is the source of it. These words, yes. Now, what was interesting was that when the Friedrich Rebbe originally made the takon of tilm, he didn't want it to look like he's making addition to tefillah, to davening. So he said like this, after Aleinu, they should say Kaddish, and then the Chazan should go away from the Omid, and go to the Bimah where they lay, or better yet, even another person, and they should say Tilim, and then they should say Kaddish, so that it shouldn't look like an extension of Davening, it should be like a totally separate issue. Inyan. A year later, after the Friyadik Rebbe was released from prison, the Friyadik Rebbe said, okay, it's Taka HaSofa, it's an addition to Davening, and that's how we do it. The davening doesn't finish. The Rebbe, you know, with the chazan stands by the yom until after tilim. The initial takana was that tilim is separate from davening. Hello, welcome.
Hello, welcome.
It was only later on that the Rebbe changed and he said that the recital of tilim should be a continuation of davening. Okay. Obli afuna etzli, and you know, without any uncertainty. I'm continuing to read. I hope there's enough tilims for everybody here. The famous paper. Ubali afuna etzli ki gam hatzetel hayadua. The famous paper. Ashamatsanu behechal abeinu shlita, which we found in the Rebbe's room. Beyem hamaiser leyata, on the day that he was arrested. Alvar ameiras tilim, about saying tilim. Gam kein hayanichta, was clearly written. Bechotche elol tafresh peivav, was written. The Friedrich was arrested in Sivan. And when the Friedrich was arrested, they found in his office he had a shtender. And on the shtender was a piece of paper. And the Soviets, when they arrested the Friedrich Rebbe, they came into his room and they made a churban. One of their MOs, one of the things that they used to do was they would intimidate you. The way they intimidated you was they would just disrespect you, you know, they went into Friedrich Rebbe's room and they just destroyed, they threw things on the floor, just made a mess. They were officially doing a search. They were not looking for anything. They were just looking to make him. And they destroyed things and they took loads of papers with them which they had no use for. There was a piece of paper right on the shtender, it was right in front of their noses. This piece of paper they didn't see, they left it there. And this piece of paper was written in pencil. And the L'chaim writes that it was clearly written, B'chotche elo tofresh peivav, the previous elo, oi tishrei tofresh bezayin, or that tishrei. In other words, 6, 7, 8 months before. Hatzetel nichta b'ksav yad kedesh b'yferetz, it's written in pencil, in the Friedrich Rebbe's handwriting. V'lai nirsham yei maksiv, it doesn't have a date. But to b'seife, at the end of the letter, who shlita mevarech, the Friedrich begiz a bracha, a berchas a gliklich in yar, a lucky and a fortunate year. O berchas a shana b'chlal, and when you give a blessing for a good year, mevarechim is given, oi b'seif shana, oi b'tchilas shana, either at the end of the year or at the beginning of the year, came daiti, this is my opinion. So when the Friedrich was arrested, as much as the Soviets turned his home and his office inside out, there was a piece of paper sitting on the shtender, which was left there. And this piece of paper talked about saying tilim. And the Friedrich Rebbe, as I said to you before, was extremely concerned. That year, Pei Zayin, 1927, the Rebbe was haunted. The Friedrich Rebbe felt something terrible was going to happen. And like I read a few minutes before, he thought it was going to happen to Chassidim, didn't think it was going to happen to him. And he was under a lot of pressure. And he said the pressure was alleviated a little bit when he announced saying tilim. V'zehu hetek hatzetel. I'm continuing to read. This is the copy of the note, shenimtzal shulchan gavoy, which was stand on the bima, on the omed behechal kvei kedushas atmer shlita, in the Friedrich Rebbe's own room, Achar HaMaisa, when he was arrested, B'yem Dalad, on Wednesday, Tezvav Sivan, Tafesh Pezayan, B'Leningrad. This is a direct quote. This is a Yiddish piece of paper, which the Rebbe had written 7 or 8 months before. And in this piece of paper, you see the Friedrich Rebbe's Ruach HaKedish. It says like this. Had Chassidim, listen Chassidim. When alle Yidden was hoffen auf Mashiach, and all Jews who hope for Mashiach, git iber in my nomen, give over in my name, alle Chassidim of the Welt, all the Chassidim in the world, as ich hab gehesen, that I instructed, as in alle Chassidische Sturm, in every Chassidische Shul, so me noch tfil Shachis, they should say, after Shachis, alle Tag, every day, Shabbos, euch ein Klal, including Shabbos, sagen Ashir Tillim, say a piece of Tillim, at vi de Tillim is zetelt, ev ditak von Chedish, as the Tillim is divided to the days of the month, mit a Minyan, and they should try to say it with a Minyan, und nach dem sagen Kaddish, and then say Kaddish. Alamark mentioned all people from the market, in other words, common people, Geschäftsleute, business people, was an inor heimische, that are at all frum. So on gain in shul davenen, they should go to shul to daven, und sein beschass men lernen den Yankiv, and stay in shul where they teach in Yankiv, the stories of the Gemara, but the Rebisch der Helfen, Hashem will help them panosa berevach, abundant panosa. Chassidim sollte sagen, as ich hab heise. Chassidim should say that I'm commanding them. Und as Yidden, an ordinary Jew sollte sagen, you should tell them, as mitzad avas Yisrael, und toivas Yisrael, that for love of a Jew, and the benefit of Jews, betich zay, I'm requesting of thee. As is all makayin zay, they should fulfill this takana of saying tilim. When the Rebish is all help, and Hashem should help, agliklich and yore, it should be a lucky year, in ruchnis v'gashmi, spiritually and materially. Or mizol and zecha zayin, we should merit, to a geula shleima, to a perfect geula durch Mashiach and Amen. This is the tzetele, which they found in the Friedrich Rebbe's room after his arrest. It had been written months before. And you see in this note the fear of the Rebbe and the sense that he needs this tilim to help him overcome whatever alamas v'estadim there were. So from the beginning of that year, the people who were close to Friedrich Rebbe felt that it's going to be a hard year. What was going on in Russia was the Friedrich Rebbe was sending Yungalite, Chassidim, Tmimim, to fill all the positions that had been vacated by the Rabbonim who abandoned their posts. Rabbonim ran for their lives because if you were a rabbi in a community and you tried to preserve Yiddishkeit, you went to jail and they harassed you and took away your job, they took away your apartment. And the Rebbe sent his boys and girls to fill all of these niches. And he did it very effectively. In any case, that year, as the year progressed, you could feel the pressure from the KGB. I don't know if you know the history. When the Friedrich Rebbe became a Rebbe, he didn't live in Leningrad. He lived in a city called Rostov. In 1924, they came to his house in Rostov, and they told him that they're going to arrest him, and put him in jail and confiscate all kinds of stuff. And the Rebbe didn't want, so he told the Friedrich Rebbe that he has one way to get out of this arrest, if he would move to Leningrad. Rostov is in the south, Leningrad is in the north. And the Rebbe agreed to move to Leningrad. Leningrad, which used to be called Petersburg, and it's called Petersburg now, had a very strong Yevsektsiya. Yevsektsiya means Jewish communists. It's tragic and unfortunate and true that the people who oppressed the Friedrich Rebbe were Jews. In Moscow, the central government was in Moscow, the Friedrich Rebbe was safer because the central government was not so mad. Stalin, of course, when Stalin took over, all bets were off. Stalin was the maddest of the mad. But in the beginning, the communists were tak idealists. They had an idea, and they had this great idea. And if you wanted to practice religion, they weren't going to stop you, although they thought you were crazy and so forth. But Leningrad, the Jewish communist Leningrad, had a free reign. The KGB, you know, if you know the history of the KGB, they keep changing names. Every time the world found out how brutal they were, they said, okay, the old organization is bankrupt, we're starting over, so they would change it from Cheka to NKVD to KGB. It was the same people, the same offices, the same. They just changed names, they continued the same tactics, but it's an overhaul, a Naya Matthias. Gave them a free hand, and they made the life of the Friedrich Rebbe unbearable. One of the more interesting events was Purim Kotno, it was the Ibayar. The Rebbe traveled to Moscow. He traveled to Moscow to meet a man named Dr. Rosen, whose code name was Shoshana. This Dr. Rosen was an American Jew who was living in Moscow as a representative of the philanthropic organizations, the Jewish tzedakahs, who gave enormous amounts of tzedakah. And the Rebbe used to meet with him twice a year and give him a budget, how much he needed to do his work. Now, this Dr. Rosen was not a frum person. He wasn't exactly interested in Kometz Alafa, but he was a Jew with a Jewish heart. And he always supported the Friedrich and Rebbe's causes. And the Friedrich Rebbe, by the way, was not just involved in Chinuch, he was involved Pashut and Panosa. Because at that time, the government allowed people to have a semi-private enterprise. And he solicited money for Panosa. This, of course, the Americans understood very well. And he gave him a proposal he needed for 6 months then, 1927, $40,000. You know what $40,000 of 1927 dollars is today? It's millions. And he offered the Friedrich Rebbe $20,000. The Rebbe had to negotiate. But it meant that he had to bring in papers, documents. The problem with documents was that the minute you put something on paper, you run the risk of it ending up in the wrong hands. In other words, as long as it's in your memory, you know, you have to pound it out of your head. But because he had to present this Dr. Rosen with all this documentation, but this was the only way he was going to get the money. So he traveled personally by train alone. And his family was afraid that he would disappear. This would happen. So as soon as he arrived in Moscow, he sent a telegram and he met Dr. Rosen. So people found out that the Rebbe is in Moskva. The Friedrich Rebbe took two hotel rooms and he ran from one hotel room to another, back and forth, running away from the Yevseks. Can you imagine Friedrich Rebbe? Mamash, you read the Sichas. You read how he describes his stay in Moscow. It sounds like he's an undercover agent, running away from other agents. They came to him and they harassed him, so he snuck out of one hotel and went to a different hotel. But he had to go back to the first hotel because he made an appointment with somebody in that hotel. It's a whole, Mamash, the whole thing. You read it and you realize, it's talking about it, it's so tragic how the Friedrich Rebbe was literally running and avoiding and dodging. He had two hotel rooms. He went from one to the next. So the people who were after him wouldn't know where he was. He would sneak out the back door. Guns and the mices. And there were also unbelievable Ashgacha brothers. Somebody found out the Rebbe was in Moscow and asked the Rebbe to come from Breng. The Rebbe couldn't say no. And the Rebbe from Breng, then the Maimev Ata Tetzave that we got from the Rebbe is based on the Maimev Akibul HaYehudim that he said that Purim Kotel. Now girls, this is the point, okay? In other words, you could beat around the bush, tell stories. The Friedrich Rebbe was a tzaddik, a holy man. Holy people, especially at Rebbe and Nosi Bisrael, they live in a different level than we do. The world they live in is very complicated, very subtle, very rich, and very holy. But when a Rebbe speaks about Mesiras Nefesh, there's no complexity. There's no intricacy. There's no nuance. There's pure power. Try to visualize the Friedrich Rebbe talking about Mesiras Nefesh. It's impossible. Because the passion and the power and the urgency and the single-mindedness with which the Friedrich Rebbe spoke about Mesiras Nefesh, it must have been hard to hear. You know, there's a word today in psychology which you probably have heard. Polar. You know what polar means? There's bipolar, right? And tripolar and quadrupolar, whatever, they're working on it. You know what polar means? An extreme, a pole. An extreme. Bipolar means two extremes, right? A person who's unipolar, is one extreme, is either very depressed or hyperactive, right? When a Rebbe talks about Mesiras Nefesh, you cannot have anything that's more polarized. There's nothing else. There's nothing except Mesiras Nefesh. And the Friedrich Rebbe shouted and screamed his kishkes out. And he said things that are so uncharacteristic of a Rebbe. But it was a time of Mesiras Nefesh. And when the Friedrich Rebbe talked about Mesiras Nefesh, he put his whole neshama into it. He used to say to Hasidim the following: if they come to you and they tell you, why don't you send your children to the school? The schools were batei shmad. You went to the secular schools. They brainwashed the kids. And they say to you, if you don't send your kids to the Goyish schools, we're going to take your children away from you and we're going to send you to Siberia. So the Rebbe said, don't send your kids to the Goyish schools. Now, how much sense does that make? You're not going to send the kids to the Goyish schools. They're going to arrest you and send you to Siberia. They're going to take kids away from you anyway. The Rebbe says, this is Mesiras Nefesh. There's no cheshbon. There isn't even a cheshbon of chinuch. No cheshbon, Mesiras Nefesh. And he used to use words, the Rebbe Tamal Gezocht, any person who dares send his children to the Goyish schools, I'm going to curse him. You imagine a Rebbe, whose words are so measured, the extreme, the passion of Mesiras Nefesh was unbelievable. And when the Friedrich Rebbe for Chassidim, he pounded into the Mesiras Nefesh.
He stood like a torch ready to burn. Mamash, the Rebbe was not hesitating for a second to give his life. There's no doubt in my mind. He was prepared to be a korban. There's no question. And he, without any reservation, without any muffling, without any making it look nice, he demanded from Yidden and Chassidim and Mesiras Nefesh. And people flocked to him in the hundreds. People needed this because it was a terrible time. And the Rebbe came to Moscow and he made a Fabrengen and he pounded Mesiras Nefesh. The Maim of Atat the Tzav, it's all about Mordechai. He gathers little kids and he's teaching them Torah and Haman is coming and he's going to kill all of them. And Mordechai says to the children, run away. And the children say, if you die, we die with you. That's it. This was the message. This was Purim Katan. A month later was Purim. Now he was back in Leningrad. And there were hundreds of Chassidim and Fabrengen. And of course the KGB came in and they stood there and they listened to every word and they wrote everything down. And Chassidim said to the Fidei Rebbe, everything you're writing is being recorded. Everything you're saying is being recorded. One day you're going to have to answer to this. And the Rebbe said, they have no impact on me whatsoever. And by that Fabrengen, Purim Pezayin, the Rebbe drank a lot of mashke. And he screamed Mesiras Nefesh. The Rebbe writes in a letter, which is published, that people told me later what I said. The Fidei Rebbe didn't even remember what he said. He chalish by the Fabrengen. And he ripped open his shirt and he pointed at his chest and he said, if you see this body burning, don't stop teaching children Torah. Imagine if Fidei Rebbe said, you see this body burning, don't stop teaching children Torah. It's important, but also difficult or impossible to you got to get it. You have to understand what it must feel like to hear a man talk about Mesiras Nefesh. Who means it? A man who says, let's jump into fire, and he's prepared. And when you hear the Rebbe talk that way, not once or twice, but in a polar way, you know what polar means? There's nothing else on the agenda. There's nothing else that's important. Not davening, not learning. Just Mesiras Nefesh. It's very, very powerful. Very powerful. And he rallied Yidden from Mesiras Nefesh. Pashut. And he wouldn't back down. They couldn't intimidate him. They couldn't threaten him. So they arrested him. The rest of the Fidei Rebbe. And of course, their original plans were, they're going to take him, you know, and do what they did to all people, bring him into the basement of the make sure that Rebbe doesn't talk anymore, you understand? The Fidei Rebbe once related that when he was by an interrogation, he looked over at the papers, he says there was a line written and crossed out, and the Rebbe said the Fidei Rebbe didn't want to say what was written on that line because he was still alive, but it was written that they were going to shoot him. That was crossed out. Then there was a second line that said 10 years of slave labor I forgot what it was called, in a very famous prison. That was crossed out. And then it said 3 years of Golson Kastrama. And the Fidei Rebbe was saved by a lot of factors, but he was very much saved by international pressure. They got a message to the Mordechai Dubin, who was a member of the SEM, of the parliament in Latvia, that was arrested. So he smuggled himself into Russia. Can you imagine a Jew smuggling himself into Russia? He got himself arrested. And he said, bring me to Litvinov, who was then the Secretary of State. I can help the Russian government. They brought him to Litvinov. He said to Litvinov, you let the Fidei Rebbe leave Russia, I will get the Latvian parliament to recognize the Soviet Union. At that time, they needed recognition. And that's how the Fidei Rebbe got out of Russia. That's how the Fidei Rebbe's life was saved.
What was that? This Jew was part of what?
He was a member of parliament in Latvia. There was a Jewish party called Agudas Yisrael. And he was a member of that. He was in the Knesset. He was in the Latvian parliament. To make a long story short, the story goes like this. The Fidei Rebbe had made up his mind that he is not going to recognize the authority of his captors at all. He was not going to show them that he respected them or was intimidated at all. Fidei Rebbe spoke a very good Russian, refused to talk Russian, insisted talking Yiddish. He never made eye contact with them, he always looked at their shoes. And his whole attitude was like, you're nobody. And these were people who could shoot him and nobody would even say boo. One time he was sitting by an interrogator, and he says to the interrogator, I want to tell you a story. So the interrogator says, excuse me, over here you say what you're told, not what you want. So the Rebbe says, when I tell a story, even Misnagdim listen. And he told the story, right? He just told the story, right? There's many stories. And of course, the famous story where the interrogator took a revolver, a gun, and just and slammed it on the table. He says, "You see this toy?" He says, "This toy makes silent people speak." So the Rebbe says, "This toy can intimidate people who have one world and many gods. But a person who has one god and two worlds, this toy doesn't intimidate." The Friedrich Rebbe meant business. Friedrich Rebbe was prepared to give his life, there's no question. To make a long story short, they came to him on Thursday, I think, Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, to tell him that he's free. Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. And they wanted to tell him that his sentence has been changed and he's going to go to exile. In other words, because of the international pressure, the government gave in, and Baruch Hashem, them, they spared his life, and they also were going to spare him the labor they would have to do for 10 years, whoever it was. And he was going to go to 3 years of exile in Asia, which also meant that he'd be away from Hasidim, away from Yidden. They would really make it impossible for him to do his work in spreading Yiddishkeit. The Friedrich Rebbe was in jail. What do you do a whole day? What do you do a whole day when you're in jail? What do you do? You daven. A ganz tag daven. The seventh tals, you daven. He's sitting with a tals over his head and he's davening. And they come into the cell, and no prisoner was called by name. Every prisoner had a number. You were identified by a number. That's what you were, a number, a yadalek. You were not allowed to have a name. It was a depersonalizing environment. And they walk in and they speak to the other three Russians in the room. We need to speak to the fourth person. The Friedrich Rebbe was the fourth person to come into the cell. And the Friedrich Rebbe was davening. So one of his cellmates taps him on the shoulder. The Friedrich Rebbe picks up his talis. He said, "They came to talk to you." The Rebbe's in the middle of davening. And they tell him to stand up. The policy in Soviet prisons were that whenever you were given an instruction, you had to stand. But the Rebbe says he's not standing up. So they tell him in Yiddish, "If you're not going to stand, we're going to beat you." He's a bit davening. He spoke
Yiddish?
He only Yiddish. They were all Jews. They were yeshiva bachrim. The people, unfortunately, there were Jewish people who were after the Friedrich Rebbe. The communists, unfortunately, were many, many Jews amongst them. And you can't blame the Jews, by the way. If you knew how hard life was under the Tsars, you would understand they were just hoping for a better world, for a less anti-Semitic world. And they got something much worse. So they said to the Friedrich Rebbe, "We're going to hit you." So he said, "No." They beat him so many times in jail, you can't even imagine. So they beat him up. They knew how to hit. And the Rebbe sat there, they beat him up, they finished beating him, and they left. He continued to daven. Like nothing happened. They came back a half an hour later, they pushed, felt bad for the man. "Stand up." "I'm not getting up." "We're going to hit you." They hit him again. And they pushed, they had a chmada, said, what? "We came to give you good news, stand up." "Look, I'm not getting up." So finally, when they realized that the man's not going to get up, they called him to the office. Instead of telling him to get up to show respect, so he went into the office and they told him that it was decided to defer his sentence and he's going to be sent off to 3 years Gals in Kastrama. And he can leave today. Which means that he'll go home, he'll spend a few hours at home, and then he'll go by train to Kastrama and he'll arrive late Friday. And they told him, "You have two options. Either you can travel in a wagon, in a train of the prisoners, but if you wish, you can pay your own way and you can travel first class also, if you have enough money." So the Rebbe asked, "When am I going to arrive in Kastrama?" So they told me, "You're going to arrive Friday night." So I said, "I don't want to travel Shabbos. I'll stay in jail." For the Friedrich Rebbe to stay in jail one more minute was not only a sakone, it was probably nigladik. Hepech halacha. You're not allowed to do that. Because every second his life was in mortal peril. And the Rebbe explained once in a whole Fabreng, and it's printed, what heter the Friedrich Rebbe had to be Mesa Nefesh, not to be Mechal Shabbos. And he spent Shabbos in jail.
Right?
Gimel was Sunday. Shabbos was Beis, the Shchedesh was Friday, but Thursday was Lamed Sivan. There's 2 days of Shchedesh. So he was told on Shchedesh Tammuz, Thursday of Shchedesh Tammuz, he chose to stay in jail over Shabbos. Sunday he was allowed to go home and spend 2 or 3 hours with his family. That was Gimel Tammuz. And then he went to the train. When the Rebbe came to the train, there were thousands of Jews waiting for him. Could be tens of thousands of Jews. The Rebbe was absolutely shocked. In other words, the loyalty, the camaraderie, the support that the Rebbe saw
thousands of Jews. And every Jew who showed up at that train station that afternoon was risking his own life. Pshutei k'mashmoi. Thousands of Jews showed up to show solidarity. So the Rebbe says, I got up on the platform of the train, he says, when I turned around and I saw all these people, I had to say something. So he made this declaration. This page. This page is the statement that the Friedrich Rebbe made on the platform of the train station as he was going off to exile. You would think a man who was arrested and put in jail and who almost lost his life. Yeah? I made, there's enough copies. Believe me, there's enough. A man who just got out of jail and he almost lost his life would be subdued. Read this piece of paper and you'll see exactly how effective they were at subduing the Friedrich Rebbe. And the paper reads as follows. The paper reads as follows. Yehi havaya lekeinu imanu. The Friedrich Rebbe, by the way, wrote this himself. But this is what he said. Yehi havaya lekeinu imanu. The Eibishu should be with us. Kasher hoyam aviseinu, as was with our fathers. Al yazveinu, he shouldn't abandon us. Val yicheinu, he shouldn't forget about us. And he translated. Hashem yizbodav zozayin mit uns. Hashem should be with us. And he certainly will be with us. As he was with his fathers. Could you imagine? This is a man who's going from one jail to the next, and he's making a speech, and it's like as if there's no jail, there's no sakana, there's no nothing. The Friedrich Rebbe told the Rebbe, that when he was arrested, so 1 or 2 days after his arrest, he was in a hallway with a lot of prisoners who were going to register. And he said, who amongst you are Jewish? And many people said they were Jewish. And he said, some of you are going from here to Slovakia. Slovakia was where they were going to send him, to slave labor. Some of you are going from here, Salavki, going home. But wherever you go, you should go, and you should tell people that you met Harav Schneer's son in the prison in Shpalerke, and he said that Yidn should have to say that never shtit Yidn. In other words, he wasn't going to back down. And he writes, the Rebbe says, that he saw Chaim Lieberman, and Chaim Lieberman was a lot of yarmulke. He took off his yarmulke, and he grabbed the Rebbe's hand, and he cried and said, "I Rebbe." The Friedrich Rebbe said, it was hard to look at him without a yarmulke. But the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, he mamish did not think about his own life at all. He saw that this is, now the third Rabbi Akiva, this is the time to die for the Eibishter. He made himself into a carbon, and he was prepared to make whoever would follow him. This is a time of Shmad. It's not about saving life. It's about fighting for Yiddishkeit. This was his approach. It's hard to understand it today, but this was what the Friedrich Rebbe said. This is what the Eibishter wants right now, is Mesiras Nefesh. That's what he wants. And he was an example of it. And he made the following statement, yeah? Hagam is ein dochnit gleich zu aviseinu, although we're not as great as our fathers. Vazei zayin geven bali mesiras nefesh bepeil mamish. They actually had mesiras nefesh. To leave Torah and mitzvahs for Yiddishkeit. And we, the Friedrich Rebbe says, are not as great as they were. You understand, the Rebbe's maimer. This was a inyan from Anivas. Vida maimer, how you do all, like the famous statement that was made by the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, was had gezocht, that was spoken by Echad Me'aviseinu HaKadoshim, one of our holy fathers. Be'ez di meluchad, your father, when the Russian government demanded from Rabbonim, of the Rabbonim, machin shinuyim in chinuch, to make changes in chinuch, of and matzav harabonim varabonis, and the condition of rabbis and their positions. I told you this before. In Tafresh Gimel, 1843, the government of Russia made a meeting. And they, quote, invited the Tzemach Tzedek to join. But it was the kind of invitation that if you didn't come, you went anyway. The Tzemach Tzedek went to Moscow, I figure, maybe it was Leningrad, Petersburg for 3 months. In those 3 months, he was arrested 22 times. Imagine in 3 months. 3 months is 90 days. 22 times they arrested him for speaking against the government. And the Tzemach Tzedek, listen to this, he went to Petersburg with Tachrichim. Does anybody not know what Tachrichim are? Tachrichim are, the Tzemach Tzedek took with him the final pair of pajamas. You understand? Tzemach Tzedek took along Tachrichim. He took along shrouds. He went to Chatchila to give his life. So one of his sons said, can you imagine a man going to a meeting, taking along tachrichim? In other words, he meant business. Tzemach Tzedek was going to give his life for chinuch.
Tzemach Tzedek was arrested 22 times?
Yeah. This is Tafesh Gimel. This is many years before. This is when it says here that the Fidikeb is quoting one of his Zaydis who said by a meeting, this is the Tzemach Tzedek.
We don't hear it in any.
Well, you have to read. There's a book called the Tzemach Tzedek and the Haskalah Movement. Read it. It's translated in English. The Tzemach Tzedek went to that meeting with Tachrichim. So one of his sons said to him, Tate du shreks de mame. Father, your friend. Imagine a man goes, the Tzemach Tzedek was a Meyushev. He was not hyperactive. He was a thoughtful man. You're frightening our mother. So she says, I wanted to be afraid. Zozi famir mispal zayin. Zi derichtike bas tamut chochem. I wanted to be afraid. She should daven for me because she's the true bas tamut chochem. She's the middle Rebbe's atochem. Whenever the Tzemach Tzedek had trouble, he would go into his Rebbetzin and say, Zog famir akpar kapit lachtilem. He held very highly on the Rebbe's and Chaim Mushke's. He asked to save me a few kapit lachtilem. And he went to this meeting, and there was a member of the Hasidim there, a Misnagdim there, a member of the business community, a member of the Reform, and the head of the government in education. And there was a very intense set of sessions, and they were trying to change Yiddishkeit. And the Tzemach Tzedek would not let them change anything. And he fought every issue, and he didn't give an inch. And there's a lot of very powerful stories. But the bottom line is, his attitude was, if you're going to make changes, you're going to do it at the expense of my life. Tzemach Tzedek was not going to let it happen. And his Mesiras Nefesh was successful. The story goes, he had a son whose name was the Maril, Ibn Aleib, who was a middle Rebbe's chassid. By this point, the Tzemach Tzedek had been a Rebbe for about 15 years. When he came home from Peterburg, so he said to the Rebbetzin, he should make a special supper. A choshev agas, a special guest is coming, my latest chassid, my newest chassid. Who was his newest chassid? His own son, who for 15 years was not his father's chassid, he was his grandfather's chassid. But when he saw the mysterious nefesh at Tzemach Tzedek, by this meeting he became a Tzemach Tzedek's chassid. And this is the quote that Tzemach Tzedek said. Nit mit unser Willen seinem Revek von Eretz Yisrael. We did not choose to leave Eretz Yisrael. Und nit mit unser Keuche zvel mit zurückkommen in Eretz Yisrael. Nor are our powers going to bring us back to the Holy Land. Avinu Malkeinu Yisbarach. Our Father, our King, blessed be He. Hat uns vertrieben in Golos. He exiled us. Vuhu Yisbarach, and He blessed be He. Vet uns oisleizim will redeem us. Vyekabitz nidacheinu me'arab ha-kanfes ha'aretz. He will gather our scattered and our dispersed from all four corners of the land. V'yelicheinu, and He will lead us, k'mamiyus, upright, ayedei Mashiach geel tzedek, to Mashiach, a righteous redeemer, or a just redeemer. La'atzeinu ha'kadesh to our holy land, m'heri v'yemeinu, amen. So we're in Golos. We didn't choose it. We can't end it. Aber, dos darfen ala amim v'sa'azaynen al-pnei adam ha'vissen. The following has to be known by all the goyim on the face of the earth. As nor unsere Gufim seinen Ibe gegeben in Golos v'shibut Malchis. Only our bodies were sent into exile and to this submission of the kings, of nations. In other words, Jews in Golos can be taken advantage of, used, hurt, but only their bodies. Aber unsere Neshamis, when it comes to our Neshamis, hat men in Golos nit vatrib, Hashem did not exile. Und in Shibut Malchis nit Ibe gegeben, we are not subject to any nation when it comes to Ruchnius. Mir dürfen sagen, Golul ein Kol, we have to announce it clear for everybody to hear and see. As was es ist negea zu unser das, anything that touches our religion, Torah, Mitzvahs, Menhage Yisrael, haben mir Jiden auf sich nicht kein Dea sagen. We Jews have no authority other than ourselves. Und kein Schum Zwingkraft, no force or coercive power, Tar of them nit oizgenitz werden is not permitted to be utilized for this end. Mir musen sagen, we must say, mit der größter, starkster idische Akshonis, with the greatest and strongest or hardest Jewish stubbornness, mit dem tausend jahrigen Stolz, with the multi-millennia stubbornness, al tigo ibe Mashiachai, do not touch my anointed ones. And do not do harm to my prophets. Who does this mean? I'll take it by Mashiach. What does the Gemara say? Yiddish kid. I'll take it by Mashiach. Don't touch Yiddish chinuch. The Tzemach Tzedek made this statement in Peterburg. And the Friedrich Rebbe standing in a train station with hundreds of KGB agents and thousands of Jews repeats the statement. Nobody has an authority on Yiddishkeit. That's it.
Paragraph of
Yeah. Yeah, this paragraph.
I thought Friedrich Rebbe said
The Friedrich Rebbe, he said this whole page.
His
Alter Seder, right. And the Rebbe...
So much.
This is not that long. This is maybe 5 minutes, 6 minutes.
And nowadays, if someone would speak in a place where they're not allowed,
how do they let us speak?
I mean, how do they let us speak for so long?
You must understand that the Soviets never anticipated the reaction to the rest of the Friedrich Rebbe. They still arrested him, don't get rid of him. The people came out of the woodwork who were prepared to die to protest. In other words, they can't kill everybody. Thousands of Jews came and said, not him. You want to arrest me? You want to shoot me? Not him. In Russia, they saw such a reaction. I'm sorry? They could have. But they were. No. Right. But they, if pressure from out of the country, international pressure mattered. They needed recognition. That was the whole miracle. You know, that Zalman Duchman said once in the Fabrengen, Yubis Tamas, that if not for our Rebbe, the Rebbe Zogazun said, there wouldn't be Yubis Tamas. So the Rebbe turned to him and said to him, the time hasn't yet come to reveal it. The big miracle of Yubis Tamas was somebody informed the Rebbe Matra Dubin. Somebody let people out of Russia know. And I figured it must have been the Rebbe. And that was the key. It was headlines in America. Headlines in America that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was arrested by the Soviets. In America. There's pictures.
Anyone have a copy of it?
Yeah, they've been published. They've been published, sure. Continues, so when the Rebbe comes to the train station and thousands of Jews come to see him, what do, put them all in jail? Just put a big fence around it? In other words, at a certain point they realized, this guy is powerful and we have to figure out a way how to deal with him, but it's more complicated than they anticipated.
Messing with Congress.
Well, they didn't mind messing, or they just had to change strategies, and they did. I mean, the fact of the matter is, they got the Friedrich Rebbe to leave Russia. In other words, the Rebbe didn't want to leave Russia. They made him leave Russia.
They made him leave Russia, sure.
They got him out of there. They wanted him out of the country. Because they couldn't do anything to him. And they didn't want him in their hair. Because he was going to keep Yiddishkeit together. So they made sure that he left the country. I'll get to it soon. It was very difficult. When the Rebbe left, it was hard. But they had Mesiras Nefesh. How many thousands? Well, that's much later.
No, this is after.
That's in the 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s. In Stalin's times, you paid with your life for Yiddishkeit. But Pashtas, they shot Chassidim in the hundreds. People came and said, "Why do you shoot my father? Why did you shoot your father? He was a Shneir Sonik." That's it. It was a reason to shoot a person without a trial because he belonged to the Shneir Son movement. You understand? Atazayat Gereta Mesiras Nefesh, says the Friedrich Rebbe, so spoke a man of Mesiras Nefesh, the Tzemach Tzedek. And the Friedrich Rebbe continues, Und mir haben nicht die richtige Starkheit. We don't have, the Friedrich Rebbe, understand, the adequate power. Sorgen offen to speak openly for the ganze Welt, for the whole world. Und weisen die meiste Tatuim, and to expose the abominable deeds, was die etliche Hundet, that a few hundred out of control Jewish young men are doing. You must understand that the war against Judaism was not fought by Goyim. It was fought by the Efsekzian, by Yidden. So the Friedrich Rebbe calls them a couple of hundred out of control young boys. Unfortunately, it was a cancer. You must understand, every one of these Jewish boys who had the Friedrich Rebbe arrested, who had Chassidim arrested, they also, Stalin gave them the same.
So what was their game?
They believed in the cause. They believed that we're going to make a new world, get rid of God, get rid of differences, everyone is going to be the same, and then there's no going to be an anti-Semitism. And but they forced it on Yidden. They didn't offer it to them, they forced it down Jewish people's throats. They forcibly closed the shuls, they forcibly closed the mikvahs. It was Jews who were harassing Jews.
They're killing Jews that shouldn't be anti-Semitism.
Right.
It sounds like Hanukkah.
Yes, right. It's tragic. And they all ended up in the firing squad. Every one of them. Alle wissen. Everybody knows. As the Gazette said, even the Soviet law, Eloi plenen teiron hiten mitzvahs, allows us to learn teiron to keep mitzvahs, and even to teach our children mit gewissa akbolus, with certain restraints. Not the Mesiris, not Mesiris and Aliles, the libels and the false informing, feeding uns or leading us in the turmith or in the katreges, or leading us into the prisons and katreges. I figure it means labor camps, but I'm not sure. So the Rebbe says, we lack the power to defy what's going on and to say it the way it is. I mean, the Fidikir Rebbe said it exactly the way it was. When Das is Lunzi Bakosh Mashem Yisbarak, we say to the Eibishter, listen to how the Rebbe translates. Al Yazveinu Val Yitcheinu, he shouldn't abandon us, he shouldn't forget about us. Doesn't mean he shouldn't forget about us and take care of us. He shouldn't forget about us and give us the power to be Mesa Nefesh. That Eibishter soll uns geben die richtige Starkheit. Hashem should give us the power. Nit nispol, then, not to be intimidated. Fundi Yisri Agu, from the suffering of the body. Yeder Einish Chas V'Shalom, every punishment God forbid. Was mir kriegen for a cheder, get for a cheder. For learning Teda, for learning Teda. For heating mitzvahs, for guarding mitzvahs. Darf das uns geben die Starkheit. This has to give us the strength. In der heilige Arbeit von Chesed HaKayad, that's the holy work of strength in Yiddishkeit. Mir darf in Gedenken, we have to remember. As Turme und Katrige, jail and Katrige, again, I suppose it means slave labor, is men nit via zeitweilige Sache, temporary. Und Teda, und Mitzvahs, wie Yisrael, seine Nehme, Teda, Mitzvahs, Yidden, are eternal. Girls, could we imagine Mesiris Nefesh? Could we imagine, in other words, could we imagine in real terms what it means to be a Yid and pay with your life? Do you think we have enough space in our fantasy, in your imagination, right, to visualize, put yourself in this position? I say we can't even imagine it. The thought would be so haunting that we wake up, you know? We couldn't even go through the dream, the fantasy, the intellectual visualization of what it means to die, to be a Yid. I
if we were alive during that time, we would have been able to?
Oh yeah, for sure. The time, the circumstance, and the Rebbe gave questions. We can't even imagine it. Can't even imagine it. This was real life. It happened to our grandfathers, or to some of our grandfathers. It's unbelievable to think what they lived through, what their lives were about, and what the Friedrich Rebbe told them is expected of them. Now, why are we sitting in Brooklyn, in Tashin Samar Zion, in 2007, 80 years later, talking about it?
Because they had Mesiris Nefesh.
They had Mesiris Nefesh, so what does it have to do with us?
We're here because of their Mesiris Nefesh.
That's very nice, but we don't live in history.
Thanks for
that. That's all true, but the real issue is... The real issue is that we need to be inspired by their example, by that... In other words, if we could visualize what it means to live in Soviet Russia, Mesiris Nefesh, and use that as a way of defining ourselves, what's important in our lives, what matters to us, what's important, what really matters. When you could revisit this world, when you could try to imagine, many times I've tried to visualize what that train station must have looked like. About 4 or 5 in the afternoon on Sunday, Gimel Tammuz, thousands of Jews, every single one who showed up was risking everything. His job, his apartment, his life, to be there. Thousands of Jews came. They didn't think about themselves at all. They were going to show the Rebbe they're behind him. And the Rebbe makes this statement. Try to imagine the energy. Try to imagine the emotions in the crowd. Try to visualize that emotion. See if you could bring that into yourself. And remember, that's a Fabrenga in Yudhis Thomas. And then, look at our lives, and our problems, and our issues, and our distractions, and let that help us. We're Yidden, we're Chassidim, we're Lubavitcher Chassidim. What do these things mean in terms of our practical lives? What's hard about our life is that it's not hard. So we create artificial hardship. You know, we have the opposite of a polar life. The easy thing about the Friedrich Rebbe's world, there was one message. There were complications. Our lives, Baruch Hashem, are complicated, are intricate. We have things. We own homes. We can afford to buy new clothes. We can eat in a kosher restaurant. They didn't have those issues. They didn't have such decisions. You understand? All of these complexities take away the simple polar energy that was the reality of that world. We have to take that polar energy and infuse it into our complex lives so that it should have a direction, it should have a spirit. We should be going in a straight line. And all the distractions and confusions and possibilities and options and opportunities that America gives us should not take us away from the path that we have because of the inspiration we get from Yud Beis Thomas. That's the point of Yud Beis Thomas Fabrengen. This page. That's why I decided to read this page. Okay? Zayt ala gesund, he finishes. You should all be well. Und stark and strong in Gashmis and Ruchnis. Ich hoffe, dass er mich bonach, I hope to God Almighty, as mein Zeitweilig and Enish, my temporary punishment. Wenn Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach bringen, will with the help of God bring a frischen Kraft, a renewed power in the Ebigen Chizek HaYavos, in the eternal job of strengthening Yiddishkeit. Und es wird mit Kuyim werden, it will be fulfilled, as Yehi Adesha Melekeinu Imonu, Kasher Hoyem Aveseinu, Al Yazvenu, Al Yitcheinu, all have light spiritually and physically, and then the Rebbe got on the train. This was Sunday Gimel Thomas. Now, Stalin was a Rosh Marusha. He epitomizes evil. So he changed, of course, the Soviet Union is the workers' paradise. It's all about workers, it's not about rich people, it's about the working class. So the workers, of course, worked very hard, 6 days a week, but needed to have a day of rest. But if the day of rest would be Shabbos, God forbid, the Jews would be able to celebrate their Sabbath. If the day of rest will be Sunday, God forbid, La'avdu, the Greek Orthodox, the Christians celebrate Shabbos. So he made Tuesday the day of rest. Okay? Tuesday is like La'avdu in America, Sunday. Or by us, La'avdu, El-Avdu, Shabbos. Monday, the Rebbe arrives in Kastrama, and when he gets there, they tell him he has to report to the officers of the KGB. So he goes out to the office of the KGB and he reports. And they tell him, the beginning of every week you have to come and report. What is the beginning of every week?
Tuesday.
Wednesday morning. No, Tuesday the offices are closed. Wednesday morning. So Monday he reports. 2 days later, Wednesday he reports again. The following week, Tuesday, a cable comes from Moscow to the offices of the KGB to send the Friedrich Rebbe home. He was there, Sachakal, a week and 2 days. Who did he take along with him, by the way? He took along the Balachayim Altoys and the Michal Dvorkin. He sent them before him to make a cheder.
He
sent them before to make a cheder. No, he told them. He came home for a few hours. He'd left on an earlier train. By the time the Rebbe arrived, it was already a cheder. And he took with him his daughter, the Rebbetzin. Rebbetzin Chaim Moshe. Tuesday, he's walking in the street and he meets someone who works in the KGB offices and he says to the Friedrich Rebbe, oh, by the way, a cable came from Moscow that you're free. But the offices are closed. So tomorrow you'll come in to your weekly reporting and we'll give you the official word and you're about to go home. He comes home, the Rebbe does, and he tells the Rebbetzin that he's given cable, that tomorrow he's going home. This is 3 years turned into 9 days. The Rebbetzin was so happy, she started to sing and dance. Apparently there were no men around. She sang Nyet Nyet Nikavod. The Rebbetzin's song was Nyet Nyet Nikavod. The next day, he goes and reports, and he's allowed to go home. Now, I want to tell you, there's a medrash that says that Haman Rasha comes to Achashverosh, and he says, the Jews are no good. Why? They don't work. Every month in Adonish, they get a holiday. So the Eibishter laughs and says, okay, Haman, you're going to give them one more day off. Stalin moves the day of rest to Tuesday. And because of Stalin, we have 2 days Yom Tov, Yud Beis and Yud Gimel Thomas. Had the day off been Shabbos or Sunday, he would have informed the Yud Beis Thomas, which by the way was his birthday, and he would have gone home that day. Because of Stalin, we have 2 days Yom Tov. This is how the Eibishter, the Hashgacha Al Yoyna, everything works in mysterious ways. So Yud Beis Thomas, he was told unofficially, and Yud Gimel Thomas, he was told officially. Remember, Yud Beis Thomas was his birthday. Just for the record, the Rebbe Rashab had a minig that every year on his birthday he used to say Chasidus, Chof Cheshvan. If it was Shabbos, he said Chassidus in public. If it was a weekday, he said Chassidus privately. But nobody knew when his birthday was. It was a secret. Tafresh Pei, 1920, which is the year of his passing. So he said a maimet in Friedrich Rebbe, which is printed in the Satel Eriacha. And after he said to the maimet, I give you a bracha that you should say Chassidus on your birthday. And Zolzayin bechesed uberachnim. It should be with kindness and compassion. Says the Friedrich Rebbe, it took 7 years. 7 years later, Yudbeis Tam was the Fidik Rebbe said Chassidus on his birthday. And from that time on, every year Yudbeis Tam was the Fidik Rebbe said Chassidus. So Tuesday he got the word unofficially. Wednesday he got the word officially. He got back on a train. He came home Friday. Tezvav Sivan, he arrived home. Of course, do you understand? The shturim by Chassidim was unbelievable. But it was short-lived. The Rebbe realized within weeks of his return that essentially he was still a prisoner. But the government wasn't going to touch him. He was too important. But any person who came near him went straight to jail. In other words, they made the whole world a prison. He was the only free person. So he was essentially in a prison inversely, backwards. So after being home for 2 or 3 weeks, the Rebbe realizes that they're not going to, he can't function. So he left Leningrad, he went to the suburb of Moscow called Malachovka, and he announced that nobody should visit him. And of course he took along the Rebbe Zin with him, the Rebbe Zin Chaim Mushka. And there were mamish 2 or 3 chassidim who were allowed to see him. Your grandfather, Reb Meir Afson, writes about the Pchatcha Fagin. He was one of the few that the Rebbe would allow to come to see him. And a whole summer the Rebbe did soul searching. And the question was, should he leave? He didn't want to leave Russia. He wanted to stay and fight. But he now became the obstacle to the war. As long as he was there, as long as it was a central power, nobody could work. Because he's a center, and people need his consultation and his support. And they were not going to let anybody work with him. They wouldn't touch him. At the end of the summer, he got on a train. He took his daughter, the Rebbetzin, and he went to Rostov. From Moscow to Rostov, it's quite a travel. And it was a very dangerous trip because, as they say in certain circles, accidents happen. You know, the Russians were very good at orchestrating accidents. And the course, the story is one chassid got a telegram that the Rebbe is coming through. So he meant to see the Rebbe, and the Rebbe is on the train. He brought them Chol of Yisrael milk, which the Rebbe very much appreciated. They were starving. And the Rebbe said to him, "How do you know I'm here?" So he said, "I got a telegram." And the Rebbe said, "You shouldn't be as smart as that smart aleck and send a subsequent telegram. You're putting me in." And the Rebbe sat on the train with his daughter and didn't talk to this guy. He came on the train. He had a whole group of bochum waiting outside to pass. The Rebbe didn't even talk to him. He stood there for a while. He left. The Rebbe didn't want to talk to him. He took his milk. He says, the Rebbe was very unhappy that people knew he was traveling. He came to the Rostov. And he went to his father's tzir. And he was there on Yud Gimel Elul. And Tezvav El Adev, they say, Asa Tem Chokmimim. And he came back and he said that Tata, Megigem, Rishus, HaReis Tzafar, my father gave him permission to leave. I wouldn't go without it. He went back to Leningrad, went home, and he made an announcement. Anybody should come for a goodbye. And the Soviets looked the other way. And thousands of Chassidim came to Leningrad. Thousands, maybe tens of thousands. There were people who never saw the Rebbe before, and then the vast majority would never see the Rebbe again. And it was a powerful tisha. It was a goodbye. And for so many Chassidim, it was so bitter that Rebbe's leaving them in this world. But the Rebbe realized that for their benefit, he had to leave. The Tishri was very emotional. And Simchas Teira, the Rebbe made a statement. Frikaba said, if anybody thinks that my departure from Russia is because of pressure and because of outside influences, you should know that you're wrong. My departure from Russia is part of a grand plan. And I use the expression, Seder Misuder Yeshka, there is a plan here. The next day he left. Before he left, there was a big to-do about his library. The government didn't want to let his library out of Russia. It had a lot of very precious books, and especially manuscripts. So the Rebbe said, if you take one page of my library, I'm not leaving Russia. Now you know how the Russians work. Bad. The Fidik Rebbe didn't budge. And they gave him. And they were told, the people from the customs were told, just anything from Shnei Esen, just stamp it. Just let it go. And they never took everything with them. Of course, you know, they asked him for a list of who he's taking along. Himself, and his mother, and his wife, and his 3 daughters, his son-in-law, and his grandson, and his future son-in-law. So they said to him, future son-in-law? You'll find a new son-in-law. He says, no, such a son-in-law, I'm not going to find. That was the Rebbe. And they didn't let the Rebbe leave with the Fidik Rebbe, apparently. The Rebbe was out of Russia. The Rebbe was not there. That Tisha, the Rebbe was not on Fidik Rebbe. He was home by his family, by his parents. And there was also a very emotional goodbye. And the Rebbe left Russia. And as the Rebbe explains, at the departure of the Fidik Rebbe from Russia, although on the surface...
The Rebbe went with them or not?
No, the Rebbe left separately.
But Rebbe got a passport from Yiddish.
Yeah, the Rebbe left. The Rebbe was he was a very big Chabad Rebbe. The Rebbe understood how to deal with the Soviets. Here in America, the Rebbe used to say, I understand them, I knew, I grew up with them. In any case, although on the surface his departure from Russia was a reflection of pressure and tzaddis and pikuach nefesh, the fact is that it was mamish meistach lefleita gedela. Eventually he came to America. And he created Yiddishkeit again after the war. The Friedrich Rebbe visited America in 1929, 1930. And the American Jews asked him to stay here. So initially he said to them that he'll think about it and he'll get back to them.
Stay where?
In America. Which would have been very good for him. He did not. He went back. He came here in 1929, 1930, went back. And the Rebbe wrote a letter and he explained to them that he appreciates their invitation, but he wants to stay in Europe. And he eventually settled in Poland, in Eastern Europe. For 6 years, the Rebbe was undecided where he wants to live. He kept on traveling around, looking here, looking there, and then he settled in Poland. And the Rebbe said then, I want to be a Rebbe over Hasidim, I don't want to be a Rebbe over the whole world. He understood that coming to America means being a Rebbe over the whole world. And the Eivishter won. I hate to say it, but it was a very high price, but the Rebbe was forced to come to America, and the Rebbe said that the Friedrich Rebbe coming to America marks his becoming a Rebbe over the whole world. And then the Rebbe explains that coming to America, since this is the furthest place from Har Sinai, this is the last Golas. From here we go to the Golan Mitzvah Shleim. Okay, a good Yom Tov and a Gesundheit.